When you allow yourself to accept that big is about who you can become, you look at it differently. In this context, big is a placeholder for what you might call a leap of possibility. It's the office intern visualizing the boardroom, or a penniless immigrant imagining a business revolution. It's about bold ideas that might threaten your comfort zones, but simultaneously reflect your greatest opportunities. Believing in big frees you to ask different questions, follow different paths, and try new things. This opens the doors to possibilities that until now only lived inside you. Sabir Bhatia arrived in America with only $250 in his pocket, but he wasn't alone. Sabir came with big plans and the belief that he could grow a business faster than any business in history. And he did. He created Hotmail. Microsoft, a witness to Hotmail's meteoric rise, eventually bought it for $400 million. According to his mentor, Farooq Arjuni, Sabir's success was directly related to his ability to think big. Arjuni says, "What sets Sabir apart from hundreds of entrepreneurs I've met is the gargantuan size of his dream. Even before he had a product, before he had money behind him, he was completely convinced that he was going to build a major company that would be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He had an unrelenting conviction that he was not just going to build a run-of-the-mill Silicon Valley company, but over time, I realized, by golly, he was probably going to pull it off." As of 2011, Hotmail ranked as one of the most successful webmail service providers in the world, with more than 360 million active users.
Going big.
Thinking big is essential to extraordinary results. Success requires action, and action requires thought. But here's the catch. The only actions that become springboards to succeeding big are those informed by big thinking to begin with. Make this connection, and the importance of how big you think begins to sink in. Everyone has the same amount of time, and hard work is simply hard work. As a result, what you do in the time you work determines what you achieve. And since what you do is determined by what you think, how big you think becomes the launching pad for how high you achieve. Think of it this way. Every level of achievement requires its own combination of what you do, how you do it, and who you do it with. The trouble is that the combination of what, how, and who that gets you to one level of success won't naturally evolve to a better combination that leads to the next level of success. Doing something one way doesn't always lay the foundation for doing something better, nor does a relationship with one person automatically set the stage for a more successful relationship with another. It's unfortunate, but these things don't build on each other. If you learn to do something one way and with one set of relationships, that may work fine until you want to achieve more. It's then that you'll discover you've created an artificial ceiling of achievement for yourself that may be too hard to break through. In effect, you've boxed yourself in when there is a simple way to avoid it. Think as big as you possibly can and base what you do, how you do it, and who you do it with on succeeding at that level. It just might take you more than your lifetime to run into the walls of a box this big. When people talk about reinventing their career or their business, small boxes are often the root cause. What you build today will either empower or restrict you tomorrow. It will either serve as a platform for the next level of your success or as a box trapping you where you are.
Thomas Henry Huxley said, "The rung of a ladder was never meant to rest upon, but only to hold a man's foot long enough to enable him to put the other somewhat higher."
Big gives you the best chance for extraordinary results today and tomorrow. When Arthur Guinness set up his first brewery, he signed a 9,000-year lease. When J.K. Rowling conceived Harry Potter, she thought big and envisioned 7 years at Hogwarts before she penned the first chapter of the first 7 books. Before Sam Walton opened the first Walmart, he envisioned a business so big that he felt he needed to go ahead and set up his future estate plan to minimize inheritance taxes. By thinking big, long before he made it big, he was able to save his family an estimated $11 to $13 billion in estate taxes. Transferring the wealth of one of the greatest companies ever built as tax-free as possible requires thinking big from the beginning. Thinking big isn't just about business. Candace Leitner started Mothers Against Drunk Driving in 1980 after her daughter was killed in a hit-and-run accident by a drunk driver. Today, MAD has saved more than 300,000 lives. As a six-year-old in 1998, Ryan Reljack was inspired by stories told by his teacher to help bring clean water to Africa. Today, his foundation, Ryan's Well, has improved conditions and helped bring safe water to over 750,000 people in 16 countries. Derek Kayongo recognized both the waste and hidden value in getting new soap into hotels every day. So in 2009, he created the Global Soap Project, which has provided more than 250,000 bars of soap in 21 countries, helping combat child mortality by simply giving impoverished people the chance to wash their hands. Asking big questions can be daunting. Big goals can seem unattainable at first. Yet how many times have you set out to do something that seemed like a real stretch at the time, only to discover it was much easier than you thought? Sometimes things are easier than we imagine, and truthfully, sometimes they're a lot harder. That's when it's important to realize that on the journey to achieving big, you get bigger. Big requires growth, and by the time you arrive, you're big, too. What seemed an insurmountable mountain from a distance is just a small hill when you arrive, at least in proportion to the person you've become. Your thinking, your skills, your relationships, your sense of what is possible and what it takes all grow on the journey to big. As you experience big, you become big.
The big deal.
For more than four decades, Stanford psychologist Carol S. Dweck has studied the science of how our self-conceptions influence our actions. Her work offers great insight into why thinking big is such a big deal. Dweck's work with children revealed two mindsets in action: a growth mindset that generally thinks big and seeks growth, and a fixed mindset that places artificial limits and avoids failure. Growth-minded students, as she calls them, employ better learning strategies, experience less helplessness, exhibit more positive effort, and achieve more in the classroom than their fixed-minded peers. They are less likely to place limits on their lives and more likely to reach for their potential. Dweck points out that mindsets can and do change. Like any other habit, you set your mind to it until the right mindset becomes routine. When Scott Forstall started recruiting talent to his newly formed team, he warned that the top secret project would provide ample opportunities to make mistakes and struggle. But, he said, eventually we may do something that we'll remember the rest of our lives. He gave this curious pitch to superstars across the company, but only took those who immediately jumped at the challenge. He was looking for growth-minded people, as he later shared with Dweck after reading her book. Why is this significant? While you've probably never even heard of Forstall, you've certainly heard of what his team created. Forstall was a senior vice president at Apple, and the team he formed created the iPhone.
Blowing up your life.
Big stands for greatness, meaning extraordinary results. Pursue a big life, and you're pursuing the greatest life you can possibly live. To live great, you have to think big. You must be open to the possibility that your life and what you accomplish can become great. Achievement and abundance show up because they're the natural outcomes of doing the right things with no limits attached. Don't fear big. Fear mediocrity. Fear waste. Fear the lack of living to your fullest. When we fear big, we either consciously or subconsciously work against it, We either run toward lesser outcomes and opportunities, or we simply run away from the big ones. If courage isn't the absence of fear, but moving past it, then thinking big isn't the absence of doubts, but moving past them. Only living big will let you experience your true life and work potential.
Big ideas. Think big. Avoid incremental thinking that simply asks, "What do I do next?" This is, at best, the slow lane to success, and at worst, the off-ramp. Ask bigger questions. A good rule of thumb is to double down everywhere in your life. If your goal is 10, ask the question, "How can I reach 20?" Set a goal so far above what you want that you'll be building a plan that practically guarantees your original goal. Don't order from the menu. Apple's celebrated 1997 Think Different ad campaign features icons like Ali, Dylan, Einstein, Hitchcock, Picasso, Gandhi, and others who saw things differently and who went on to transform the world we know. The point was that they didn't choose from the available options. They imagined outcomes that no one else had. They ignored the menu and ordered their own creations. As the ad reminds us, people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the only ones who do. Act bold. Big thoughts go nowhere without bold action. Once you've asked a big question, pause to imagine what life looks like with the answer. If you still can't imagine it, go study people who have already achieved it. What are the models, systems, habits, and relationships of other people who have found the answer? As much as we'd like to believe we're all different, what consistently works for others will almost always work for us. Don't fear failure. It's as much a part of your journey to extraordinary results as success. Adopt a growth mindset, and don't be afraid of where it can take you. Extraordinary results aren't built solely on extraordinary results. They're built on failure, too. In fact, it would be accurate to say that we fail our way to success. When we fail, we stop. We ask what we need to do to succeed. We learn from our mistakes, and we grow. Don't be afraid to fail. See it as part of your learning process, and keep striving for your true potential.
Don't let small thinking cut your life down to size. Think big, aim high, act bold, and see just how big you can blow up your life.
Part 2. The Truth, the Simple Path to Productivity. Eric Heller said, "Be careful how you interpret the world. It is like that." Unclenched.
For many years, I suffered from trying to live the lies of success. I began my career assuming everything mattered equally, so in an effort to cram it all in, I attempted too much at once. Frustrated, I eventually began to doubt I had the discipline or will to achieve success at all. As my life continually fell out of balance, I started to consider that trying to live a big life might be a bad thing. When you try to live up to something that isn't possible, you can get pretty down. I was pretty down. In an attempt to make it all work, I began to bear down even harder. You might say that I started to clench my way to success. I really did. I thought that this might be the way you went through life, with your jaw clenched, your fist clenched, your stomach clenched, and your butt clenched. Leaning forward, breath held and body taut, tight and totally tense. I just assumed that was the feeling of focus and intensity as I struggled to live with the lies. That approach actually worked, but it also put me in the hospital. I also began to think you had to talk like a success, walk like a success, and even dress for success. It wasn't me, but I was open to any way to make things work. So I took seriously the suggestion that you are supposed to project the way you want to be. That approach worked as well, but after a while, I simply got tired of playing success. I bought into getting up before the crack of dawn, getting revved up playing inspirational theme songs, and getting going before anyone else. In fact, I became so full of this thinking that I would drive to the office while the rest of the city slept and then crash at my desk just to make sure that I beat everyone else to work. I started to accept the notion that maybe this is what ambition and achievement looked like as I fought the good fight. I would hold staff meetings at 7:30 in the morning, and at 7:31, I would actually shut the door and lock out anyone who showed up late. I was going overboard, but I was beginning to believe this was the only way you could succeed, and the way you pushed others to succeed as well. This approach also worked, but in the end it also pushed me too hard, others too far, and my world over the edge. I was truly beginning to think that the secret to success was to get as tightly wound up as possible each morning, set myself on fire, and then open the door and fly through the day unwinding on the world until I literally burnt out. And what did all of this get me? It got me success, and it got me sick. Eventually, it got me sick of success. So what did I do? I ditched the lies and went in the opposite direction. I joined Overachievers Anonymous and went anti-establishment on all the success tactics that supposedly build success. First off, I got unclenched. I actually started listening to my body, slowed down, and chilled out. Next, I started wearing t-shirts and jeans to work and defied anyone to make a comment. I dropped the language and the attitude and went back to just being me. I had breakfast with my family. I got in shape physically and spiritually and stayed there. And last, I started doing less. Yes, less. Intentionally. Purposefully less. I was looser than ever, way laid back for me, and breathing. I challenged the axioms of success, and guess what? I became more successful than I ever dreamed possible, and felt better than I'd ever felt in my life. Here's what I found out. We overthink, overplan, and overanalyze our careers, our businesses, and our lives. I learned that long hours are neither virtuous nor healthy, and that we usually succeed in spite of most of what we do, not because of it. I discovered that we can't manage time, and that the key to success isn't in all the things we do, but in the handful of things we do well. I learned that success comes down to this, being appropriate in the moments of your life. If you can honestly say, this is where I'm meant to be right now, doing exactly what I'm doing, then all the amazing possibilities for your life become possible. Most of all, I learned that the one thing is the surprisingly simple truth behind extraordinary results.
Chapter 10, The Focusing Question. George Anders said, "There is an art to clearing away the clutter and focusing on what matters most. It is simple and it is transferable. It just requires the courage to take a different approach."
On June 23, 1885, in the town of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Andrew Carnegie addressed the students of the Curry Commercial College. At the height of his business success, the Carnegie Steel Company was the largest and most profitable industrial enterprise in the world. Carnegie would later become the second richest man in history after John D. Rockefeller. In Carnegie's talk, entitled "The Road to Business Success," he discussed his life as a successful business person and gave this advice. "And here is the prime condition of success, the great secret. Concentrate your energy, thought, and capital exclusively upon the business in which you are engaged. Having begun on one line, resolve to fight it out on that line, to lead in it, adopt every improvement, have the best machinery, and know the most about it. The concerns which fail are those which have scattered their capital, which means that they have scattered their brains also. They have investments in this, or that, or the other, here, there, and everywhere. Don't put all your eggs in one basket is all wrong. I tell you, put all your eggs in one basket, and then watch that basket. Look round you and take notice. Men who do that do not often fail. It is easy to watch and carry the one basket. It's trying to carry too many baskets that breaks most eggs in this country. So how do you know which basket to pick? The answer is the focusing question. Mark Twain agreed with Carnegie and described it this way. The secret of getting ahead is getting started. The secret to getting started is breaking your complex, overwhelming tasks into small, manageable tasks, and then starting on the first one. So how do you know what the first one should be? Again, it's the focusing question. Did you notice that both of these great men considered their advice a secret? I don't think it's so much a secret as something people know but don't give proper weight or importance. Most people are familiar with the Chinese proverb, a journey of 1,000 miles must begin with a single step. They just never stop to fully appreciate that if this is true, then the wrong first step begins a journey that could end as far as 2,000 miles from where they want to be. The focusing question helps keep your first step from being a misstep.
Life is a question.
You may be asking, why focus on a question when what we really crave is an answer? It's simple. Answers come from questions, and the quality of any answer is directly determined by the quality of the question. Ask the wrong question, get the wrong answer. Ask the right question, get the right answer. Ask the most powerful question possible, and the answer can be life-altering. Voltaire once wrote, "Judge a man by his questions rather than his answers." Sir Francis Bacon added, "A prudent question is one half of wisdom." Indira Gandhi concluded that the power to question is the basis of all human progress. Great questions are clearly the quickest path to great answers. Every discoverer and inventor begins his quest with a transformative question. The scientific method asks questions of the universe in hypothesis form. The more than 2,000-year-old Socratic method, teaching through questions, is still embraced by educators from the heights of Harvard Law School to the local kindergarten class. Questions engage our critical thinking. Research shows that asking questions improves learning and performance by as much as 150%. In the end, it's hard to argue with author Nancy Willard, who wrote, "Sometimes questions are more important than answers." I first became aware of the power of questions as a young man. I read a poem that affected me profoundly, and I've carried it with me ever since. Listen for yourself.
My Wage by J.B. Rittenhouse.
I bargained with life for a penny, and life would pay no more, however I begged at evening when I counted my scanty store. For life is a just employer. He gives you what you ask. But once you have set the wages, why, you must bear the task. I worked for a menial's hire, only to learn, dismayed, that any wage I had asked of life, life would have willingly paid. The last two lines deserve repeating. Any wage I had asked of life, life would have willingly paid. One of the most empowering moments of my life came when I realized that life is a question, and how we live it is our answer. How we phrase the questions we ask ourselves determines the answers that eventually become our life. The challenge is that the right question isn't always so obvious. Most things we want don't come with a roadmap or a set of instructions, so it can be difficult to frame the right question. Clarity must come from us. It seems we must envision our own journeys, make our own maps, and create our own compasses. To get the answers we seek, we have to invent the right questions, and we're left to devise our own. So how do you do this? How do you come up with uncommon questions that take you to uncommon answers? You ask one question, the focusing question. Anyone who dreams of an uncommon life eventually discovers there is no choice but to seek an uncommon approach to living it. The focusing question is that uncommon approach. In a world of no instructions, it becomes the simple formula for finding exceptional answers that lead to extraordinary results. The focusing question asks the following: What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? The focusing question is so deceptively simple that its power is easily dismissed by anyone who doesn't closely examine it. But that would be a mistake. The focusing question can lead you to answer not only big picture questions such as, where am I going or what target should I aim for, but also small focus ones as well, like, what must I do right now to be on the path to getting the big picture? Or, where's the bullseye? It tells you not only what your basket should be, but also the first step toward getting it. It shows you how big your life can be, and just how small you must go to get there. It's both a map for the big picture and a compass for your smallest next move. Extraordinary results are rarely happenstance. They come from the choices we make and the actions we take. The focusing question always aims you at the absolute best of both by forcing you to do what is essential to success. Make a decision. But not just any decision. It drives you to make the best decision. It ignores what is doable and drills down to what is necessary, to what matters. It leads you to the first domino. To stay on track for the best possible day, month, year, or career, you must keep asking the focusing question. Ask it again and again, and it forces you to line up tasks in their levered order of importance. Then, each time you ask it, you see your next priority. The power of this approach is that you're setting yourself up to accomplish one task on top of another. When you do the right task first, you also build the right mindset first, the right skill first, and the right relationship first. Powered by the focusing question, your actions become a natural progression of building one right thing on top of the previous right thing. When this happens, you're in position to experience the power of the domino effect.
Anatomy of the question.
The focusing question collapses all possible questions into one. What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary?
Part 1. What's the one thing I can do?
This sparks focused action. The phrase, what's the one thing, tells you the answer will be one thing versus many. It forces you towards something specific. It tells you right up front that, although you may consider many options, you need to take this seriously because you don't get 2, 3, 4, or more. You can't hedge your bet. You're allowed to pick one thing and one thing only. The last phrase, can do, is an embedded command directing you to take action that is possible. People often want to change this to should do, could do, or would do. But those choices all miss the point. There are many things we should, could, or would do, but never do. Action you can do beats intention every time.
Shel Silverstein said, but those woulda, coulda, shouldas all ran away and hid from one little did. Part 2. Such that by doing it.
This portion of the focusing question tells you there is a criterion your answer must meet. It's the bridge between just doing something and doing something for a specific purpose. Such that by doing it lets you know you're going to have to dig deep, because when you do this one thing, something else is going to happen.
Part 3. Everything else will be easier or unnecessary.
Archimedes said, "Give me a lever long enough and I could move the world." And that's exactly what this last part tells you to find. Everything else will be easier or unnecessary is the ultimate leverage test. It tells you when you've found the first domino. It says that when you do this one thing, everything else you do to accomplish your goal will now either be doable with less effort or no longer even necessary. Most people struggle to comprehend how many things don't need to be done if they would just start by doing the right thing. In effect, this qualifier seeks to declutter your life by asking you to put on blinders. This elevates the answer's potential to change your life by doing the leveraged thing and avoiding distractions. The focusing question asks you to find the first domino and focus on it exclusively until you knock it over. Once you've done that, you'll discover a line of dominoes behind it either ready to fall or already downed.
Big ideas. Great questions are the path to great answers. The focusing question is a great question designed to find a great answer. It will help you find the first domino for your job, your business, or any other area in which you want to achieve extraordinary results. The focusing question is a double duty question. It comes in two forms, big picture and small focus. One is about finding the right direction in life, and the other is about finding the right action. The big picture question asks, what's my one thing? Use it to develop a vision for your life and the direction for your career or company. It is your strategic compass. It also works when considering what you want to master, what you want to give to others and your community, and how you want to be remembered. It keeps your relationships with friends, family, and colleagues in perspective and your daily actions on track. The small focus question asks, what's my one thing right now? Use this when you first wake up and throughout the day. It keeps you focused on your most important work and, whenever you need it, helps you find the levered action or first domino in any activity. The small focus question prepares you for the most productive work week possible. It's effective in your personal life, too, keeping you attentive to your most important immediate needs, as well as those of the most important people in your life.
Extraordinary results come from asking the focusing question. It's how you plot your course through life and business, and how you'll make the best progress on your most important work. Whether you seek answers big or small, asking the focusing question is the ultimate success habit for your life.
Chapter 11, The Success Habit. Arnold H. Glaso said, "Success is simple. Do what's right, the right way, at the right time."
You know about habits. They can be hard to break and hard to create. But we are unknowingly acquiring new ones all the time. When we start and continue a way of thinking or a way of acting over a long enough period, we've created a new habit. The choice we face is whether or not we want to form habits that get us what we want from life. If we do, then the focusing question is the most powerful success habit we can have. For me, the focusing question is a way of life. I use it to find my most leveraged priority, make the most out of my time, and get the biggest bang for my buck. Whenever the outcome absolutely matters, I ask it. I ask it when I wake up and start my day. I ask it when I get to work, and again when I get home. What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? And when I know the answer, I continue to ask it until I can see the connections and all my dominoes are lined up. Obviously, you can drive yourself nuts analyzing every little aspect of everything you might do. I don't do that, and you shouldn't either. Start with the big stuff and see where it takes you. Over time, you'll develop your own sense of when to use the big picture question and when to use the small focus question. The focusing question is the foundational habit I use to achieve extraordinary results and lead a big life. I use it for some things, and not at all for others. I apply it to the important areas of my life, such as my spiritual life, physical health, personal life, key relationships, job, business, and financial life. And I address them in that order. Each one is a foundation for the next. Because I want my life to matter, I approach each area by doing what matters most in it. I view these as the cornerstones of my life, and have found that when I'm doing what's most important in each area, my life feels like it's running on all cylinders. The focusing question can direct you to your one thing in the different areas of your life. Simply reframe the focusing question by inserting your area of focus. You can also include a time frame, such as right now, or this year, to give your answer the appropriate level of immediacy, or in 5 years, or someday, to find a big-picture answer that points you at outcomes to aim for. You can ask yourself focusing questions specific to each category of your life, be it spiritual, physical, personal, key relationships, your job, business, or maybe finances. First, say the category, then state the question. Next, add a time frame, and end by adding, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary. For example, for my job, what's the one thing I can do to ensure I hit my goals this week, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary?
For my spiritual life.
What's the one thing I can do to help others? What's the one thing I can do to improve my relationship with God?
For my physical health.
What's the one thing I can do to achieve my diet goals? What's the one thing I can do to ensure that I exercise? What's the one thing I can do to relieve my stress?
For my personal life.
What's the one thing I can do to improve my skill at whatever I may choose? What's the one thing I can do to find time for myself?
For my key relationships.
What's the one thing I can do to improve my relationship with my spouse or partner? What's the one thing I can do to improve my children's school performance? What's the one thing I can do to show my appreciation to my parents? What's the one thing I can do to make my family stronger?
For my job.
What's the one thing I can do to ensure that I hit my goals? What's the one thing I can do to improve my skills? What's the one thing I can do to help my team succeed? What's the one thing I can do to further my career?
For my business.
What's the one thing I can do to make us more competitive? What's the one thing I can do to make our product the best? What's the one thing I can do to make us more profitable? What's the one thing I can do to improve our customer experience?
For my finances.
What's the one thing I can do to increase my net worth? What's the one thing I can do to improve my investment cash flow? What's the one thing I can do to eliminate my credit card debt?
Big ideas. So how do you make the one thing part of your daily routine? How do you make it strong enough to get extraordinary results at work and in the other areas of your life? Here's a starter list drawn from our experience and our work with others. Understand and believe it. The first step is to understand the concept of the one thing, then to believe that it can make a difference in your life. If you don't understand and believe it, you won't take action. Use it. Ask yourself the focusing question. Start each day by asking, "What's the one thing I can do today for whatever you want to achieve?" such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or even unnecessary. When you do this, your direction will become clear, your work will be more productive, and your personal life more rewarding. Make it a habit. When you make asking the focusing question a habit, you fully engage its power to get the extraordinary results you want. It's a difference maker. Research says this will take about 66 days. Whether it takes you a few weeks or a few months, stick with it until it becomes your routine. If you're not serious about learning the success habit, you're not serious about getting extraordinary results. Leverage reminders. Set up ways to remind yourself to use the focusing question. One of the best ways to do this is to put up a sign at work that says, "Until my one thing is done, everything else is a distraction." We designed the back cover of this book to be a trigger. Set it on the corner of your desk so that it's the first thing you see when you get to work. Use notes, screensavers, and calendar cues to keep making the connection between the success habit and the results you seek. Put up reminders like, "The one thing equals extraordinary results," or "The success habit will get me to my goal." Recruit support. Research shows that those around you can influence you tremendously. Starting a success support group with some of your work colleagues can help inspire all of you to practice the success habit every day. Get your family involved. Share your one thing. Get them on board. Use the focusing question around them to show them how the success habit can make a difference in their schoolwork, their personal achievements, or any other part of their lives.
This one habit can become the foundation for many more. So keep your success habit working as powerfully as possible. Use the strategies outlined in Part 3, Extraordinary Results, for goal setting and time blocking to experience extraordinary results every day of your life.
Chapter 12, The Path to Great Answers. F.M. Alexander said, "People do not decide their futures. They decide their habits, and their habits decide their futures."
The focusing question helps you identify your one thing in any situation. It will clarify what you want in the big areas of your life, and then drill down to what you must do to get them. It's really a simple process. You ask a great question, then you seek out a great answer. As simple as two steps, it's the ultimate success habit. You can view Figure 17 online at theonething.com to see the two steps outlined for you. Asking a great question, which is step one, means to think big and specific. This leads to step two, which is finding a great answer. And that means research and role model.
Step one, ask a great question.
The focusing question helps you ask a great question. Great questions, like great goals, are big and specific. They push you, stretch you, and aim you at big, specific answers. And because they're framed to be measurable, there's no wiggle room about what the results will look like. Look online at Figure 18, and you'll find what we call the Great Question Matrix. Here you can see the power of the focusing question as it's laid out into four different options or quadrants. You can think big and broad, or small and broad, or even small and specific. But to get the best results, you need to be thinking big and specific. Let's take increasing sales as a way to break down each of the quadrants, using the question, "What can I do to double sales in 6 months?" This is the placeholder for big and specific. Now, let's examine the pros and cons of each question quadrant, ending with where you want to be, which is big and specific. Refer to Figure 19 online to see how each question fits into each quadrant of the Great Question Matrix.
Quadrant 4, Small and Specific.
In Quadrant 4, the question turns into, "What can I do to increase sales by 5% this year?" This aims you in a specific direction, but there's nothing truly challenging about this question. For most salespeople, a 5% bump in sales could just as easily happen because the market shifted in your favor rather than anything you might have done. At best, it's an incremental gain, not a life-changing leap forward. Low goals don't require extraordinary actions, so they rarely lead to extraordinary results.
Quadrant 3, Small and Broad.
In Quadrant 3, the question is more like, "What can I do to increase sales?" This is not really an achievement question at all. It's more of a brainstorming question. It's great for listing your options, but requires more to narrow your options and go small. How much will sales increase? By what date? Unfortunately, this is the kind of average question most people ask, and then wonder why their answers don't deliver extraordinary results.
Quadrant 2, Big and Broad.
Here the question might be, "What can I do to double sales?" You have a big question, but nothing specific. It's a good start, but the lack of specifics leaves more questions than answers. Doubling sales in the next 20 years is very different from attempting the same goal in a year or less. There are still too many options, and without specifics, you won't know where to start.
Quadrant 1, Big and Specific.
In quadrant one, the question is, what can I do to double sales in 6 months? Now you have all the elements of a great question. It's a big goal, and it's specific. You're doubling sales, and that's not easy. You also have a time frame of 6 months, which will be a challenge. You'll need a big answer. You'll have to stretch what you believe is possible and look outside the standard toolbox of solutions. Do you see the difference? When you ask a great question, you're in essence pursuing a great goal. And whenever you do this, you'll see the same pattern, the pattern of big and specific. A big, specific question leads to a big, specific answer, which is absolutely necessary for achieving a big goal. So if the question, what can I do to double sales in 6 months, is a great question, how do you make it more powerful? Convert it to the focusing question. What's the one thing I can do to double sales in 6 months, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? Turning it into the focusing question goes to the heart of success by forcing you to identify what absolutely matters most and start there. Why? Because that's where big success starts too.
Step 2. Find a great answer.
The challenge of asking a great question is that, once you've asked it, you're now faced with finding a great answer. Answers come in three categories: doable, stretch, and possibility. Refer to Figure 20 online to see these three categories graphed out. The easiest answer you can seek is the one that's already within reach of your knowledge, skills, and experience. With this type of solution, you probably already know how to do it and won't have to change much to get it. Think of this as doable and the most likely to be achieved. The next level up is a stretch answer. While this is still within your reach, it can be the farthest end of your range. You'll most likely have to do some research and study what others have done to come up with this answer. Doing it can be iffy, since you might have to extend yourself to the very limits of your current abilities. Think of this as potentially achievable and probable, depending on your effort. High achievers understand these first two routes, but reject them. Unwilling to settle for ordinary when extraordinary is possible, they've asked a great question and want the very best answer. Extraordinary results require a great answer. Highly successful people choose to live at the outer limits of achievement. They not only dream of, but deeply crave what is beyond their natural grasp. They know this type of answer is the hardest to come by, but also know that just by extending themselves to find it, they expand and enrich their life for the better. If you want the most from your answer, you must realize that it lives outside your comfort zone. This is rare air. A big answer is never in plain view, nor is the path to finding one laid out for you. A possibility answer exists beyond what is already known and being done. As with a stretch goal, you can start out by doing research and studying the lives of other high achievers, but you can't stop there. In fact, your search has just begun. Whatever you learn, you'll use it to do what only the greatest achievers do, and that's benchmark and trend. A great answer is essentially a new answer. It's a leap across all current answers in search of the next one, and is found in two steps. The first is the same as when you stretch. You uncover the best research and study the highest achievers. Anytime you don't know the answer, your answer is to go find your answer. In other words, by default, your first one thing is to search for clues and role models to point you in the right direction. The first thing to do is ask, has anyone else studied or accomplished this or something like it? The answer is almost always yes. So your investigation begins by finding out what others have learned. One of the reasons I've amassed a large library of books over the years is because books are a great go-to resource. Short of having a conversation with someone who has accomplished what you hope to achieve, in my experience, books and published works offer the most in terms of documented research and role models for success. The Internet has quickly become an invaluable tool as well. Whether offline or online, you're trying to find people who have already gone down the road you're traveling, so you can research, model, benchmark, and trend their experience. A college professor once told me, "Gary, you're smart, but people have lived before you. You're not the first person to dream big, so you'd be wise to study what others have learned first and then build your actions on the back of their lessons." He was so right. And he was talking to you, too. The research and experience of others is the best place to start when looking for your answer. Armed with this knowledge, you can establish a benchmark, the current high watermark, for all that is known and being done. With a stretch approach, this was your maximum, but now it is your minimum. It's not all you'll do, but it becomes the hilltop where you'll stand to see if you can spot what might come next. This is called trending, and it's the second step. You're looking for the next thing you can do in the same direction that the best performers are heading, or, if necessary, in an entirely new direction. This is how big problems are solved and big challenges are overcome, for the best answers rarely come from an ordinary process. Whether it's figuring out how to leapfrog the competition, finding a cure for a disease, or coming up with an action step for a personal goal, benchmarking and trending is your best option. Because your answer will be original, you'll probably have to reinvent yourself in some way to implement it. A new answer usually requires new behavior. So don't be surprised if along the way to sizable success, you change in the process. But don't let that stop you. This is where the magic happens and possibilities are unlimited. As challenging as it can be, trailblazing up the path of possibilities is always worth it. For when we maximize our reach, we maximize our life.
Big ideas. Think big and specific. Setting a goal you intend to achieve is like asking a question. It's a simple step from "I'd like to do that" to "How do I achieve that?" The best question, and by default the best goal, is big and specific. Big because you're after extraordinary results. Specific to give you something to aim at and to leave no wiggle room about whether you hit the mark. A big and specific question, especially in the form of the focusing question, helps you zero in on the best possible answer. Think possibilities. Setting a doable goal is almost like creating a task to check off your list. A stretch goal is more challenging. It aims you at the edge of your current abilities. You have to stretch to reach it. The best goal explores what's possible. When you see people and businesses that have undergone transformations, this is where they live. Benchmark and trend for the best answer. No one has a crystal ball. But with practice, you can become surprisingly good at anticipating where things are heading. The people and businesses that get there first often enjoy the lion's share of the rewards with few, if any, competitors. Benchmark and trend to find the extraordinary answer you need for extraordinary results. Part 3. Extraordinary Results. Unlocking the possibilities within you. Will Rogers said, "Even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there." Extraordinary results.
There is a natural rhythm to our lives that becomes a simple formula for implementing the one thing and achieving extraordinary results: purpose, priority, and productivity. Bound together, these three are forever connected and continually confirming each other's existence in our lives. Their link leads to the two areas where you'll apply the one thing, one big and one small. Your big one thing is your purpose, and your small one thing is the priority you take action on to achieve it. The most productive people start with purpose and use it like a compass. They allow purpose to be the guiding force in determining the priority that drives their actions. This is the straightest path to extraordinary results. Think of purpose, priority, and productivity as three parts of an iceberg. We provide a visual of this iceberg in Figure 22 online at theonething.com. With typically only 1/9 of an iceberg above water, whatever you see is just the tip of everything that is there. This is exactly how productivity, priority, and purpose are related. What you see is determined by what you don't. The more productive people are, the more purpose and priority are pushing and driving them. With the additional outcome of profit, it's the same for business. What's visible to the public, productivity and profit, is always buoyed by the substance that serves as the company's foundation, purpose and priority. All business people want productivity and profit, but too many fail to realize that the best path to attaining them is through purpose-driven priority. Personal productivity is the building block of all business profit. The two are inseparable. A business can't have unproductive people, yet magically still have an immensely profitable business. Great businesses are built one productive person at a time. And not surprisingly, the most productive people receive the greatest rewards from their businesses. Connecting purpose, priority, and productivity determines how high above the rest successful individuals and profitable businesses rise. Understanding this is at the core of producing extraordinary results.
Chapter 13, Live with Purpose. George Bernard Shaw said, "Life isn't about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself."
So how do you use purpose to create an extraordinary life? Ebenezer Scrooge shows us how. Cold-hearted, penny-pinching, and greedy, a man who despised Christmas and all things that give people happiness. His last name, a byword from miserliness and meanness. Ebenezer Scrooge might have been the least likely candidate to teach us anything about how to live. Yet in Charles Dickens' 1843 classic, A Christmas Carol, he does. The redemptive tale of Scrooge's transformation from stingy, callous, and unloved to considerate, caring, and beloved is one of the best examples of how our destinies are determined by our decisions and our lives are shaped by our choices. Once again, fiction provides a formula we can all follow to build an extraordinary life with extraordinary results. I'd like to beg your forgiveness and take a little literary license to quickly retell this timeless tale. One Christmas Eve, Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by the deceased spirit of Jacob Marley, his former business partner. We do not know if this is a dream or if it's real. Marley wails, "I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and a hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits from the past, present, and future. Remember what has passed between us." Now, let's stop for a second and bear in mind who Scrooge is. Dickens describes him as a man whose old features are frozen by the cold within him. Tight-fisted, with head down and hand to the grindstone, Scrooge pays as little as possible and keeps as much as he can. He is secretive and solitary. No one ever stops him in the streets to say hello. No one cares, for he cares for no one. He is a bitter, mean, covetous old sinner. Cold to the sight, cold to the touch, and cold of heart, with no thaw in sight. His life is a lonely existence, and the world is worse off for it. Over the course of the evening, the three spirits visit Scrooge to show him his past, present, and future. Through these visits, he sees how he became the man he is, how his life is currently going, and what will ultimately happen to him and those around him. It's a terrifying experience that leaves him visibly shaken when he wakes the next morning, not knowing whether it was real or a dream, but giddy upon discovering no time has passed. Scrooge realizes there is still time to alter his fate. In a joyous blur, he rushes into the street and instructs the first boy he sees to go buy the biggest turkey at the market and send it anonymously to the home of his sole employee, Bob Cratchit. Upon seeing a gentleman he'd once rebuffed for pleading charity for the needy, He prays for forgiveness and promises to donate huge sums of money to the poor. Ebenezer eventually ends up at the home of his nephew, where he begs forgiveness for being such a fool for far too long,